Welcome to The Brief, the Middle East PR Association podcast, keeping you up to date with topics and trends in the industry. My name is Kate Mittoon. I'm the chairperson of the Middle East PR Association. In today's podcast, we'll be addressing the important topic of navigating mental health in the communications industry. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. We explore the crucial topic of mental health with PR professionals in the Middle East region. We discuss strategies for managing stress in the fast-paced world of public relations, the importance of mental health awareness, and the support systems available within the industry. Today I have with me Tanya Katili, Vice President of our MEPRA Youth Board. We also have Scott Armstrong, founder of Mental, and Kevin Teixeira, co-founder and managing partner of Warehouse Gym. Welcome, guys. So to jump in, Tanya, you're a young communicator and a future leader of our industry. You're also a certified mental health first aider. Tell us what in your experience has been the most useful strategies that you've seen effective in the workplace for managing mental health.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me here today. I'm an account director at Weber Shandwick and the vice president of the MEPRA Youth Board, as you've mentioned. And, you know, the PR and comms industry is very fast-paced. It's, staying on top of the news all the time, particularly in an agency where your client's eye and ears. You have to stay up to date. You have to be the first to bring the news. You have to have your strong media and influencer relations and containing them. But aside from all that, it's really the business of people. Whether it's internal or external, you're working with people, with your clients, with media, with your colleagues. It's all about dealing with people. And we're humans at the end of the day. As much as we separate work from personal life, we are humans, you have emotions. And that's important to remember every single day. It's the business of people. And that's how I kind of work with my colleagues and with everyone around me. There are things, of course, that I've built throughout the years that kind of helped me and helped me establish, my strategies, particularly when we're working in stressful times. Some of the things I've learned first is to have a plan in place, even if things change and things will change and will always change. Having a plan, having your to-do list helps you understand the solution you need to put in place when things don't go according to plan. Another thing that took me a lot of time to understand, but I eventually reached that point, it's okay to ask for help. Ask for help. It won't take any of the passion away. It won't take any of your hard work away. Yes, a lot of times, you know, working over weekends, working in the evenings, events, and all these things come from a place of passion. But it's okay if you have an extra pair of hands that can help elevate it and that can still be part of your story and your success and your team's success. It will just give you a bit more time to focus on you, on your well-being, your mental health. And that's not just on Mental Health Awareness Month. That's for the entire year, every single day of the year. And that's very important. Another thing that I think is really helpful is to listen to your body. Even if you have a lot of work, sometimes your body just needs a break. When you feel like you cannot work, take a step back. Go for a walk. Leave the room. Leave your laptop for a bit. Go to the gym. Do some this. Just change the scenery for a bit. And sometimes the best ideas don't come from a brainstorming room. They come when you're out with your family, when you're out with your friends, when you're walking. That's how you come up, and you come up with a fresh perspective, and then you can continue. At the end of the day, it's PR, not ER. I think that's the famous saying. Another tip I also usually give my colleagues when ahead of event season, ahead of, you know, challenging times, is to keep a folder with positive feedback they've received at one point, something that made them very happy at one point, something that made them proud, be it personal or professional. Because sometimes, especially when you're doing something for the first time or it's challenging, there is tendency to doubt yourself. In certain cases, especially when you're under a lot of stress or something, when something goes wrong, we're all human, we're bound to make mistakes. So when you go back and read those positive examples, they remind you of what you're capable of, and that can really serve as a boost and like continue pushing forward. Also, the power of positive feedback. Of course, constructive feedback is very important. That's how people grow. That's how everyone learns. But also positive feedback, even for something small, because progress is different from one person to another. And in certain cases, and everyone is going through something we don't know about on their, in their personal life. So sometimes just a simple gesture of appreciation and acknowledging the effort by staying close to your colleagues or people you work with and understanding the amount of effort they put into specific activities and acknowledging it is very important. And interesting, we were just discussing now that as I grew in my career, I realized that the more you grow, the less you get positive feedback. It's more you are the one giving positive feedback to the others. But sometimes it's also important to give feedback, positive feedback upwards. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's because the more you grow, the more you have responsibilities. And for someone to come and appreciate that and not just take it for granted, acknowledging that can go a long way.
Yeah, I think, absolutely. Yeah. I think some really, really great points there around strategies for people in the workforce. As we know, it can be really strenuous. It can be, you know, 14, 16 hours a day for sometimes months on end. And having those strategies, I'm sure, are really useful for people who are entering the industry as well. But Scott, you've worked in on the dark side of PR, and you've also worked as a journalist as well. I'd love to hear your thoughts there about what you think some of the strategies are. I know you're very candid about some of the experiences that you've had in the industry as well, but would love to hear about some of the strategies that have worked for you.
Yeah, I mean, everything you just said is like so relevant and so valid. I mean, we know, as you say, 14, 16 hour days. How often does a client ask for a pitch, you know, at 6 o'clock on a Friday, and you've got to deliver it by, you know, 9 a.m. on a Monday? It comes with a lot of pressure. I think the thing we see all the time, and we talk to employers and employees, is we look at the burnout figures in this part of the world. You know, Cigna did a recent study, and it was 95% of people in the UAE were struggling with burnout. 94% in Saudi Arabia were struggling with burnout. Mm. And one of the big sort of symptoms and one of the big effects of burnout is a lack of creativity and an inability to think creatively, which is fundamental to your industry. So both from an employee level, from a personal level, if you're not looking after yourself, you're not going to be able to perform at your best. Mm. And as an employer, if you are burning out your people, then your agency is not going to be able to perform its best. I remember, because we've spoken before, Kay, haven't we?
Yeah.
And I remember that survey that MEPRA did back in 2020, and 45% of the people that responded to your survey said that mental health was impacting their ability to do their job.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it is a really sort of important wake-up call, both on an individual level, but also on an employer level, to go, if I actually really want to be effective and achieve things here, either at an agency level or an individual level, I need to take this seriously.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk a little bit about what employers can be or should be doing as well shortly. So, Kevin, we're going to jump to you. So you're the co-founder of Warehouse Gym, which recently celebrated its 10th anniversary. Congratulations. And you've pledged to providing an environment that is that's a safe space for mental health and well-being. Can you tell us more about this and what you're doing to help support that relationship between mental health and physical well-being?
Yeah, sure. I mean, mental health is a very important, and as you know, the managing director and leading the company, I've pledged to make it more of our corporate responsibility to look at the aspect of mental health. You know, as being in the fitness industry, we were so very much focused on the physical aspect, we really neglect the mental aspect. And I think it's bringing awareness to that. It's bringing awareness to the fact that mental health is a continuum like physical health as well. You know, some days I feel great, some days I don't feel as good. And I think when it comes to the mind, we kind of it's either we feel good or we don't feel good. And I think, you know, some days it fluctuates. So I think what I would like to do, and what we're doing with the team, is bringing that to the forefront, not just from our members, but also twofold. We're also looking at what we can do to help with our members and what we can do for our staff. So it's obviously bringing awareness. We've done a number of activities to kickstart and particularly focusing on men's mental health, mm-hmm. Which we will then obviously we're broadening to mental health and, you know, for men, women and children as well, because we do have a lot of children's classes within the gym. But we kickstarted it off with an event called Man Games, which was for men, which was teams of men competing. And we put a twist on it because all the judges had to be female. And I think obviously, yes, it was an initiative for raising awareness on men's mental health. But it's also important to get women involved as well, because, you know, every female will have a brother, a father, a son, a friend, which can help and help support. So we've kickstarted it with our Mind Games, and we are doing incorporating walks, and we're calling it Walk and Talk. And we're taking a bunch of guys out and, you know, to do some hikes, because I think that's also a good opportunity to get people together. Be sometimes when there's no barriers, you know, as people walk and they can open up and talk. So bringing these events, bringing awareness, using our reach, social media to talk about, you know, looking for, you know, symptoms, making sure they're aware of their health, their mental health, and also, you know, working with a partner as well to bring teams in that could allow, you know, our staff to have opportunity to talk, having sessions with a counsellor, group sessions, just to again identify, because I think one big problem is, I mean, we don't identify when we're not feeling great, and mm-hmm. we assume that we should always be feeling good. And I think specifically for men, I think men are very difficult, and, you know, find it very difficult to be in touch with their feelings and expressing themselves. So I think it's really, you know, bringing that awareness, using professional services, embed them into the gym, making our gyms obviously feel comfortable and safe. You know, exercise is important. It's a second home for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So we just want to make sure these spaces are safe and people feel comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important, building that community where it's okay to talk about mental health and for both men and women. Scott, I'm sure you have a lot to say about that and the link. I mean, someone who has, you know, started a company based on bringing awareness to the stigma around mental health and well-being. What would you like to add to what Kevin's just said?
Well, I mean, I applaud Kevin for the initiative that he's taking in mental health. And, you know, we often try and make the business case to businesses for this, when we know it is good business to be a good business. And we'd hope to be able to reach CEOs in the heart, but often, you know, we have to make the business case to reach them on the head about all of this. It's interesting that you talk about community. It's so, so important. Mm. Men in particular, we do find ourselves very isolated and not being able to come forward and talk about that. And yet we know that isolation and loneliness that's caused by not being able to come forward is as damaging for your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And I've seen the cost of this personally. One of the drivers for launching Mental in the first place was my incredibly successful, very physically strong CEO father, mm-hmm. who was struggling with depression and couldn't talk to anyone about it, couldn't talk to me about it.
Yeah.
And when that hit, we lost him in 3 months.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was literally mental was kind of born when I was looking down at him in his open casket going, we never talked about this. And why couldn't we talk about this?
Yeah, absolutely.
So trying to burst that isolation and create, you know, the safe space. And that's all the science we talk about, is that psychological safe space where people feel that they can share and actually they're empowered to be vulnerable is really, really powerful, both on kind of a personal level, but also at a professional level. You know, even in terms of the P&L of a business, it will, we've seen it with so many studies. There was a study that looked at 100 studies into the return on investment of well-being and taking the kind of initiatives that Kevin's taken at Warehouse. And it came back at 327% return on investment, which kind of equates to around, if you invest $10,000 in this space, you get $42,700 back, to be precise.
Just roughly.
Like, show me a cryptocurrency that's offering you that right now.
Yeah.
Show me a, you know, a strategy that your company has. Mm. What are you going to do? You're going to make it more efficient? You're going to cut some heads and make people work harder? Or are you actually going to make everybody feel that they're psychologically safe?
Yeah.
Because the discretionary effort you get from that, the buy-in of having people that feel safe, heard, empowered, mm-hmm. it translates directly to business performance.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It makes sense on every level, from a personal level and a professional level.
Absolutely. And so what do you see as some of the tools that employers or people who are, you know, sitting there with their P&L in front of them, what are some of the strategies that can be employed in the workplace other than buying everyone a membership at Warehouse Gym?
Well, I mean, the first step is to actually have the conversation. And often it's having the conversation at a boardroom level and building in actual time. I think, you know, when we look at the world of, you know, exercise and fitness, the first thing we often say to people is build in a set amount of time. Don't just like sacrifice, you know, you don't work out after everything else is done. You prioritize it and then you move on. And it's the same with your diary. Again, we worked with Cigna on their 5% pledge, which was like, leaders take 5% of your time and stick it in your Outlook calendar. So it is there every week to talk and focus on the mental health inside your business. So that's kind of one of the strategies. Not ironically, but it makes perfect sense in this conversation that how are you talking to your team all the time about this as well? So it's all very well you saying, yep, we're going to embrace mental health and we're going to create this culture. But are you constantly talking about it? You know, in a communications industry, we work with clients who keep their message on to their customers or their stakeholders all the way through the year. You build them strategies with a timeline of moments that you can communicate. Except in many organizations we see, and this is one of the things at Mental that we are working very strongly to tackle, is that we'll have a mindfulness session, or we'll come in and we'll have a yoga session, or we'll come in and maybe we'll do mental health first aid or financial literacy. But those initiatives are not strung together in a coherent narrative, which is constantly communicating inside the business and outside the business in terms of bringing talent into your business. So it's kind of like throwing a pebble in a pond. It'll ripple so far and then it all dies away and then you never knew that the pebble had been thrown. So that's kind of like two very strategic things you can do is A, make the time and put it in your Outlook calendar. So you as an organization focus on this every time and then look at how can you communicate that and create that sense of psychological safety, because you've got people coming into the company all the time. You'll have talent coming in. You need an always on strategy for psychological safety. Otherwise, the ripples die away.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really powerful. And so, Tanya, Scott has just mentioned there that, you know, we're always creating plans. We're always working on things for our clients to communicate various things. Do you think communicators can have an impact on mental health within the industry, further than just our industry? Do you think we can have an impact, and do we have a responsibility to do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is this responsibility. At the end of the day, we're spending so many hours in the office, but at the end of the day, we're all going to go back home and go out with our friends. And as much as we want to detach, at the end of the day, that culture you are in the office stays with you in a lot of time, as it's contagious. It has a ripple effect. When there is this positive culture where there is this awareness, like Scott really emphasized on this awareness, and that won't happen overnight. That's something that, and it's not a click of a button. It's not something on just, you know, on Mental Health Awareness Month and then that's it. That's an ongoing thing. And then that stays with the people when the team is happy, and that's reflected with the clients. And then when people go back home, those employees go back home, it's shared with their families, it's shared with their surroundings. That's how ripple effect is created. And everyone has a responsibility on that front. Sometimes people just, like as a mental health first aider, I was certified by Lighthouse Arabia as a mental health first aider. And that's very much, if you think about it, as similar to, you know, medical first aid. You're not a doctor, but at the same time, you can take that very first urgent step of helping and acknowledging and realizing. And when you have that, this starts raising that level of awareness. And then questions start being asked. There is this non-judgmental space that Scott talked about, and that's how it starts. That's how I start multiplying, be it in the office or outside the office. So yes, it's a responsibility, both on leaders in our industry, but also on everyone. Honestly, everyone is responsible for that. Everyone, it's a very important topic. It's something that it's great that the companies are acknowledging it more and putting more efforts into it, and that should continue, and that should be the norm. It shouldn't even be an extra value. It should be the norm. It should be at the very core of it, just like physical health.
Yeah. I've always felt that psychological safety in your industry is incredibly important because there are often external drivers, there are external impacts on your mental health, whether that be the client, because sometimes the client's a sweetheart, but sometimes the client's not, you know, and you're getting feedback that can be salty at times and difficult to take. So does your organization have your back? Do you feel safe and empowered, or do you feel, you know, is your threat response there because the client said something? And then, and again, I have to apologize for my former profession, you also have to talk to journalists, and we are grumpy. We are really grumpy people. I'm a recovering journalist, you know, I've left that in my mind. But yeah, so there's many external factors on your mental health. So creating that internal culture of psychological safety is super important.
Absolutely. There are things like, honestly, when you gain your respect or lose it to certain employers, when you have that one feedback was given to me when I started my latest job, is that, and I was taking a secondment role, and that was the first, and I was relatively at the start of my career at that point. And I remember I was an account executive then, and the CEO of the company came and told me, who had just met me, was like, if you feel for a second that you've been treated differently, if anyone said anything to you that made you feel uncomfortable, and mind you, that was one of our biggest clients, you come to me straight. Mm-hmm. That's not something I'm willing to jeopardize. Your well-being is not something I'm willing to jeopardize. And 6 years later, that stayed with me. I never forgot that. And these are the things that really make a difference and have to, you know, remain on the long run.
Secondments can be quite isolating as well, because, you know, you're inside. Well, it might be a great culture or it might be a toxic culture inside a client, but at the same time, you're slightly disconnected from even the supportive culture of the agency that you might be working for. So secondments can be quite tough mentally.
Absolutely. I think, that mindset of not quite being part of the client team and not quite being part of the agency team can really, really be challenging for sure. So we obviously produce a lot of things within the communications industry that other people are digesting, and a lot of that is now on screens, and there are people sitting there scrolling away and consuming content nonstop on social media, or even, you know, reading the tabloid headlines, and that has a very, very big impact on people. So it's not necessarily a mental health condition, but it definitely affects the mental well-being. Scott, what would you say to listeners who might potentially be consuming some of this and feeling affected by it?
I would say stop. As a journalist, I mean, one of the things that I, reason why I sort of wanted to get out of journalism and start this was I was worried for my children. I saw how polarized and polarizing both social media and the media is. You are much better trying to get away from that and go and spend at least an hour in one of Kevin's facilities and do some exercise, because you're away from all of that. You know, that it's a constant drumbeat of anxiety. And you've got to remember that a lot of this is driven by algorithms that want engagement. And those what engages most is fear, anger, and polarization. So it's not good for you. I would say if you are impacted by that, then the first step with everything in this is have a conversation, and have that conversation with yourself. I've just spent 3 days at Abu Dhabi Global Healthcare Week, and we've got an online tool that we've created in connection with one of the clinics here, and the amount of people that came along and took the test, and it gives them a score about their mental health, and a lot of people were like, oh yeah, I knew I was stressed. And this tool that kind of just like help them have a conversation with themselves and start that conversation with yourself. So how am I doing? Check in with myself. What do I need to do? Do I need to prioritize my nutrition? Do I need to prioritize my sleep? Do I need to prioritize fitness and engage with someone like, with Kevin to actually get some better practices? Because constant scrolling is bad for you for a number of reasons, you know, sort of mentally, but it's also taking you away from the opportunity to do something physical that can have a real benefit to your mental health.
Absolutely. Do you think people sometimes try to convince themselves that they're doing better than they actually are? Do you think that test that you've been running at Abu Dhabi Global Health Week, did you see people kind of waking up to the realization of where they're at?
Yeah, absolutely. We had an amazing guy, Dr. Matthew McCourt from the Free Spirit Collective, with us on this. And I just sort of stood there in awe listening to him talking to all these different people. But he was saying, like, even the scrolling sometimes, it's functional. It's a functional response where we don't want to engage with the actual anxiety. We might bury ourselves in work, and sometimes we might bury ourselves in fitness, or we'll bury ourselves in scrolling. Anything to actually stop ourselves from having to face up to how we are genuinely feeling. Yeah. So it is a functional response, and maybe cut yourself a bit of slack that you were in that space, because it's so easy to get into that space. But then once you have that conversation with yourself and recognize, and it is quite good that people do recognize that they're in that space. And that's the space around mental health versus mental illness. Like, how do you optimize? You have the opportunity to go up the scale in terms of improving your mental health just by taking a few simple steps. And the first step is having that conversation with yourself, and then having that conversation with, sometimes you do need to have a conversation with a therapist. You know, my philosophy on that, as you know, when we try to tell people, is that therapy is maintenance. We go to the gym to maintain and look after our physical health. What do we do to look after our mental health? And there are benefits from physical health, and Kevin will, you know, can talk much more educated about that than I, but he's absolutely right. The science shows us that even 15 minutes and 8 seconds of exercise will give you a mental boost.
Is that the specific
number? Yeah, massive piece of research done by ASICS, which was also called Mind Games, run by Brendan Stubbs, incredible doctor with King's College London. He spent 30 years looking at the link between mental health and physical health. 15 minutes and 8 seconds. So you don't have to go and pump iron for an hour. Yeah. Literally 15 minutes and 8 seconds of physical exercise will give you a mental health boost.
Yeah, brilliant. That's interesting to know. I think we're all going to try and get our 15 minutes and 8 seconds.
Not seven.
Not 7 seconds. So, Kevin, jumping back to some of the things that you were talking about earlier, and, you know, I think sometimes because of societal norms and stereotypes, sometimes it can be more difficult for men to be vulnerable and talk about the pressures or mental health issues. But also would be really interested to hear about your thoughts on the link between mental health and EQ as well, from your experience working within the gym.
Yeah, look, I think definitely, I mean, as we set out, we did focus on men's mental health because there is a problem there, and there's a problem there specifically in men. And I, again, you know, I don't know if it's nature or nurture. I don't know if it's something inherent in men, that struggle to talk, and maybe, you know, lack, you know, this kind of emotional intelligence women have, and, you know, men tend to score lower on these kind of things. But is it also a reflection of the environment and stereotypes and how men should be? And I think there's a lot of confusion for men right now out there in the media. I think obviously, you know, you have this like image of how a man should be, and you see these obviously influencers and, you know, how high achievers and and very macho. But then there's a flip side to it as well, where there's this toxic masculinity and people like, so there's, I think there's the messaging there for men is quite confusing. I think a lot of men and people in general are lost, and they're struggling to find themselves. And I think if men naturally don't have that ability to connect with themselves like females, I think it's very important that, you know, like anything can be learned, developed. So I think it's, you know, the environment, bringing again awareness to look for, you know, signals. You know, Scott was saying then about it's very easy for men and people in general. And I keep being quite specific because it's what we are focusing on right now. But to go down a rabbit hole, we've seen that, you know, get this down this rabbit hole, social media, these confused messages that, you know, aren't exactly, you know, portray life and reality. So yeah, I think with men, it's very important to try and just, you know, get the message across to, you let them know it's okay to talk and, you know, connect with your feelings. Don't, you know, have your, you know, assume that, you know, you have to have this bravado, this image of, you know, what a man should be. So I think it's, and again, with our messaging is to, you know, is to get men to talk, open up, let them know, okay, it's, you know, it's okay to talk and feel the way they do.
Mm.
There's this misconception, we seem to hold this thing that, you know, it's just us and it's somehow our failure and it's somehow we are weak. We ran a men's retreat and we had about 8, 9 and they were all vice presidents, you know, and the most powerful thing we did in it was the men's circle where we just sat and talked about our experiences. And it was amazing how many of these executives talked to each other and went, your problems are exactly the same as my problems. And they all felt lost, but they were also like, it isn't just me. And and that is, you know, the one thing we say so often is you're not alone, because the research tells us, you know, we are the majority of people, male and female, are struggling.
Yeah.
McKinsey has it at 66% across the Gulf in a piece of research they did about a year ago. So you are not alone. It isn't just you, and you are not weak. And we've got a lot going on. We talk about suicide and men, and Kevin and I were talking before we came on the podcast. Kevin rightly was talking about, you know, last year, I think it was 700,000 people committed suicide, and 77%, 80% of them were men. You know, so we have this, oh yeah, we're strong individual men, but you hit the 40s, you've got all these responsibilities up the chain and down the chain, whether it be to your boss or to your team beneath you, to your children and to your wife, your school fees, your mortgage, your increasing rent. And we've also got physical things going on with us. You know, we don't have the menopause in the same way that women do. We don't fall off the cliff, you know, in a hormonal sense. But our testosterone levels drop every year after we hit 40. And that's when it gets harder to get rid of the brunch belly and it, you know. And so we're already stressed. We can't talk because we're weak. And then we're looking in the mirror and we don't quite like what we see. Maybe your hair is falling out. Thankfully, mine has been gone for a long time, so I've got to terms with that. But then it's difficult. And who do you turn to? Mm. You know, and what are the tactics? And how do you actually reach out and ask for help?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's you know, I think that's the question, who do you turn to? And I think, you know, sometimes men feel very isolated. And again, you know, is it just social, you know, as a role, as a man has to have this, portray this image? It could also be the career, you know, sometimes if you are in higher management, sometimes it's quite difficult to talk as well. And you know, as we go through these stages in our lives, and you know, families grow, you know, children move on, you know, financial strains come. Sometimes, you know, men will feel lost and will not know which direction. And then again, you go down the social media direction, and you see other people having this perfect life, how a man should be. The messaging is really confusing, and something that's really, you know, a statement that hit me hard was that when I heard the biggest risk to a man under 45 is himself. It's not, you know, going outside, getting in a car, you know, having an accident. The biggest risk to a man today under 45 is himself. And I think that says it all. And again, you know, you're in this world, in your mind, and it can be just a vicious rabbit hole that can just keep going down.
And it's not just the man himself. It's the messaging that Kevin's talking about that is sent to men. Do you remember when Gillette tried to actually change its message from the best a man can get to a best a man could be? And the social media, I mean, it was clumsily
backlash.
Done, but the social media backlash they got from that, which was, you know, actually, no, you can be a more open and vulnerable and decent human being. No, get back to being toned and in the gym and, you know, let's get back to athletes, you know, and they've not returned to that slogan, I think, since.
Yeah. That's the power, isn't it? The power that we hold to be able to.
You do have a responsibility to communicate.
Exactly.
You know, this industry does.
Yeah, indeed.
Honestly, if I couldn't help but think, when you talk to children, when you talk to kids, the girl is always the princess. You look pretty, you look cute. And the boy is usually the superhero. You're strong. You're, you know, be a man. Expressions like that, be a man, or, you know, pull yourself together like a man.
Man up.
man up, exactly. These things, when you think about them, these are things we've been hearing our entire lives. Mm. That's a whole perception that needs to change. Yeah. Like a girl needs to be pretty, a boy needs to be strong.
Psychologists will tell you that man up is one of the worst things you can actually say to anybody in any situation.
Right? Yeah. I think men feel like they have this burden to be the provider, to be, and, you know, as, you know, ups and downs in one's career and financial constraints happen, that puts, I believe, a lot of pressure on men. And I think, you know, what you were saying, when you were asking the question before about, like, emotional intelligence and, you know, is there any thing that men can do to be in touch with themselves versus, you know, when you look at females, and females very much have, you know, a better understanding, they talk, a connection with how they feel, okay, expressing how they feel, because there's definitely a link there, I believe, because when you look at depression and, you know, poor mental health, you know, women technically have more depression than men, but as you're saying, Scott, you know, 80% of suicides are coming from men. There is something there. And, you know, is it something that's inherently built, wired, framed into a man? Or is it something that, you know, society's telling us?
Our self-language, though, is a lot more violent. You know, we are brought up with more violent terms. Our games are war. You know, the language that we use as men is just inherently more violent, and that self talk is inherently more violent, and that translates into we are four times more likely to complete on an act of suicide than women. The patriarchy sucks, and it sucks for women, but it's also a trap for men.
Yeah, indeed, it's something that society has built that we've got to work on together. And so, Tanya, the other day when we were talking, I know we spoke a little bit about male and female mental well-being, but also you had spoken a little bit about the Arab cultural well-being and the way that Arabs are brought up to express themselves as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's really building on what you've discussed, and the same way, like, you know, there's be a man. It's generally, you know, in Arabic it would be you know, rijal, when you say, like, just like when someone, when it shows that he's strong, when you want to describe someone that is strong and powerful, it's like rijal. That's simply the which translates to man. And that simply kind of that gives that expression. So there is this cultural sensitivity, and that sometimes a lot of people don't go get help or ask for help, because there is this misconception that if you're asking, you're getting that help, then there is a big issue with you. Or some people could literally say, maybe a bit of older generation, if you encourage someone to, you know, seek mental, like speak to a mental health professional, the response could be, no, I'm not crazy. So there is this misconception, and that can a lot of times stop people from going and getting that help and feeling embarrassed. And a lot of times it's really feeling embarrassed to go get that. It's like almost acknowledging that there is something wrong with them. And there is this cultural sensitivity around this. It's improving to a certain extent, but to continue to improve, there needs to continue to be awareness around it and continue to be education around it.
What would you say to someone that's in that situation at home, maybe where they've got their parents are a bit more traditional and giving them that feedback, or that they've been brought up in that environment? What would you say to them?
They need to put themselves first. They need to put themselves first. Nothing is more important than your mental health. It's similarly, even imagine you've hurt yourself physically. It wouldn't stop you from getting treatment if someone told you, no, don't go get treatment. The same way, you would just still get treatment or find a solution for it or do something about it. Do the same for your mental health, even if it means standing up for whoever you need to stand up to. And it's also important to, you don't necessarily need to talk about it if you're not comfortable talking about it. That's the important part, is that non-judgmental, safe space. Of course, it's important to research who you go speak to. It's important to, I would encourage to go to someone who understand your culture, your background, to create that relatability, to understand where you're coming from. Research the profession you speak to. And then when you speak to them, you're free to share that, inform the people around you or not.
It's fascinating.
And that comes down to you.
We had some good conversations, you know, over the last 3 days, you know, using this tool and with the psychologist there. And one of the questions we got a lot from Arabic you know, Emirati girls, Emirati guys were coming forward going, right, so A, what the facilities, and B, so if I access therapy via my health insurance or I access therapy via my employee assistance program, and many of the organizations we work have employee assistance programs and will connect you to a psychologist or a therapist, is that going to get weaponized against me? And both the, you know, and as the, they will say to you, whether it's an EAP, your company doesn't get any data that they can use against you. Even if it's an EAP, the only thing that the company will get is a kind of like top level figures on usage. There's no personal details that were ever provided by a therapist to your company. So there are often, there's access to assistance there, but you need to feel safe enough to go and have that conversation. But know that if you do go via an EAP or you go and see a therapist, that won't get back to your employer. It is a safe space. You should take the opportunity to go and talk. But also you have to go when it feels right for you, because therapy is hard as well. You know, it is a commitment. You know, it's, you're going to be unpacking some emotions that are tough, but if the time's right, don't let this fear of stigma or the fear that somehow your parents or your employers are going to be told what's said in the room. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that first step. Mm. It's like almost like you want to go to the gym, but you keep delaying it. And it's like, go get dressed and push yourself.
Yeah.
It's that first step.
Yeah.
Mm. Once you do it and you're in.
I mean, it's easy for us to say, just talk. And, you know, this is a messaging that we have for men. But the sad thing is some people don't have people to talk to as well. Mm. You know, and as you said, sometimes cultural differences as well make it hard for people to speak to family. So I think it's important that, you know, people are aware, and you know, services and clinics are you know, they are growing, which is great. But having that more access to services as well,
I would say, you know, particularly whether you're a guy or a woman, like, research what facilities your company have. Does your mental health insurance, does your insurance policy have mental health in there? Or does it have an EAP? Most EAPs come with a 24-hour counseling line, which is completely anonymous. And it is, if you've got no one that you could reach out to, I've used it. I've accessed therapy through it, you know, and it is, you know, it's a safe space. It is difficult to get over that initial inhibition. But then once you start talking to that person, it's really helpful. And then they will then connect you with a psychologist. And if, you can either go in person or you can do it as Zoom if that's what you want. I mean, I would recommend doing it in person because it was transformational for me. But there's still, there is the, you can do it over Zoom. So you can do it in a private space where you don't even feel like you have to get over that inhibition to walk through the door of a clinic. Yeah. So it is, again, just start, and it's worth the effort to do it, even if you don't feel that you can talk to someone close to you, because you're still, you know, worried about that inhibition. And in every case that I've ever, every guy I've spoken to as well that has reached out to a friend, none of them have ever been knocked back. It's like we were talking about Paddy Pimblett, who's this UFC fighter, incredible athlete. And when he won his title, he picked the microphone, turned around to the crowd, and he said, my friend, this is for my friend who literally just committed suicide. And he said, if you are a guy and you are going through stuff, I would rather you cry on my shoulder than go to your funeral. Mm. And that was the message from a tough guy.
Yeah.
It is, honestly. You won't get knocked back. Yeah. It's just overcoming that hurdle.
Yeah.
But if it helps to talk to a stranger, then talk to a stranger, because the people that are employed by them are compassionate people that know what you're going through.
Indeed. Yeah. I think some really important topics there today. And I think resounding messages around creating safe spaces. And thank you, Kevin and the Warehouse Gym, for the safe spaces that you're actively creating, creating awareness as well, and being open to the discussion. And whether or not that's yourself, if you're facing issues, or being there for someone else who needs that support as well. So thank you Tanya and Kevin and Scott for being here today and for sharing so openly. And thank you to everyone who has listened as well. Just a reminder that the members of the Middle East PR Association have access to the Employee Assistance Program as well, and the information is on our website. So please do reach out if you need help or someone in your family needs help. Likewise, if you're not a member of the Middle East PR Association and would like to, please please reach out on the website or through community@mepra.org. Thank you.